Hey everyone, we are recapping Chief of War Episode 9, so there may be spoilers ahead. If you'd like to skip the recap, feel free to jump ahead to right around the 5-minute 15-second mark. Thanks for listening, and enjoy this episode of Feathers and Fire.
Nekeoa, you have no idea what's coming.
Welcome to Feathers and Fire, HPR's Chief of War After Show podcast. Thanks so much for joining us for deeper discussion and additional context to the Apple TV Plus series. We're so glad you're listening. I'm Russell Subiono.
Aloha mai, and I'm Mehana Makainai. And we have arrived at the season finale. It was complete with a touching family resolution, intense anticipation and preparation for war, a monumental battle scene, and tragedy mixed with an overwhelming feeling of relief.
Yeah.
Before we get into today's review and topics, when we discussed episode one, the first thing we did was react to our opening impressions. So I think it's only appropriate to end how we started. Russell, what are your initial reactions to episode 9, The Black Desert, season 1, season finale of Chief of War? Do you have a word that sums things up for you?
I would say that word is appropriate.
Oh.
And so, like, the ultimate outcome of the series and of this episode is kind of generally in line with our history, right? Kamehameha is victorious in this battle, and it sets the stage for him to continue to unite the islands. And what was really great is the battle is as epic as they've been building up to it. And we finally get to see Kamehameha in action, although it's kind of short, right? And he kind of, when he is in action, he does look like a boss, mm-hmm. like fully in control and really out there looking like...
So easy for
him. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So smooth. The battle also had lots of sweeping shots and blood and guts. And, you know, the heroes do kind of hero-y things and the villains are defeated. There's some collateral damage that doesn't make the victory perfect. Poor Kupu'ohi.
We don't know. Hopefully she'll be okay.
Yeah, keep your fingers crossed. And I love this idea of a third party, the eruption, being an interloper in the battle. Overall, I feel like it ended as it should have, but I was also like kind of small kind disappointed with like the last 10 minutes or so. No climactic confrontation with Keo'ua. Is our girl Kupu'ohi going to live? And what's with this orgy at the end? There hasn't been an explicit sex scene the entire time, and now we get one? Seemed like a weird note to end on.
Yeah, a little out of place.
Yeah, kind of strange. But my disappointment doesn't diminish the finale. It just bums me out that it could have been better, but I really liked it. I thought it was really appropriate for the series.
Honestly, I felt very fulfilled with how the season ended. I don't know if our reactions are what Chief of War was hoping for, appropriate, fulfilled. But how you explain yours, let me explain mine. It might sound kind of weird, but I actually appreciate that Chief of War didn't rush to conclude all of the stories it's been working to create over the past 8 episodes. There are quite a few open-ended plots, and I'm totally okay with that. In fact, I would rather have opportunities to continue to grow storylines versus bringing everything to an abrupt finish and maybe being left feeling like, is that it? So the stories they did conclude, I felt like, yes, we explored them in great detail. We have become very invested as viewers. And it seems like the, to use your word, appropriate time to wrap these things up. The culmination of the season being the battle with Kiowa, it made sense. And really, it was a great way to showcase the fulfillment of a prophecy by allowing Kamehameha to fully step into this warrior chief leadership role. As everybody at the end said, Eo Kamehameha. I also think the resolution within Ka'iana's ohana between himself, Kupu'ohi, and Namake was much needed. And if they hadn't done it, it would have been a really hard pill to swallow. In addition to being a much-needed resolution, it was also unexpected for Hollywood. And for me, it was refreshing and exactly what I had hoped for. And I know you and I have been going back and forth on this for a long time, but it was maturity. It was understanding. So, yes, this episode was gripping. It was exciting. It was emotional. and it left me feeling content with where the story brought us and how it left us ready for the next chapter. But I do agree, the orgy thing, kind of out there.
Yeah, weird.
Weird. Speaking of the next chapter, it's time for us to get into our discussions. Today, we'll be dedicating our conversation to the epic battle scene and what we can connect this to from Hawaiian history. But first, it's recap time.
So we open on the kingdom of Hawaii, where Keaua preps for war at the foot of the erupting Mauna Loa. Meanwhile, back in the Kohala district, Kamehameha also preps for battle. He names Kaiana as his chief of war and appoints Kaahumanu to his council. As the army preps for war, Namake finally confesses to Kaiana about his relationship with Kupu'ohi, and we see Kaiana forgive his brother. We then jump to Oahu, where we see Kahikili at Kupule's bedside. After stabbing him in the last episode, Kahikili blames the influence of Lima, Kupule's advisor and Aikane, for turning his son against him. Kahikili strings up Lima only to have Kupule order that he be spared.
Back on Hawaii Island, the day of war has come, and we see Kaiana and his family emerge from their hale, armed and prepared for battle. They join Kamehameha, Kaahumanu, and the warriors at the aha to pray to the war god Kukailimoku. In the next scene, we see Kamehameha and his army arrive on the black lava fields in Kau and come face to face with Kiowa's army and the battalion Kahekili has sent over from Maui.
The spiritual battle takes place first, with Kamehameha's kahuna continuously chanting against Keaua's kahuna. Then Opunui steps out to try and verbally humiliate Kamehameha's army by ridiculing them. Kaiana returns the favor, making several shaming accusations of his own. Keaua then makes the first move, sending the warriors to attack. Kaiana responds by introducing them to the muskets. And at that point, both armies, men and women, young and old, advance into battle. And throughout the battle, several of the main characters are highlighted. We see a glimpse of Kamehameha the warrior as he enters the fray, and we see Heke square off against Opunui. As the eruption from Mauna Loa increases, we see the lava flow onto the battlefield, separating the armies and ultimately taking the land beneath them. Kaiana then finds himself face-to-face with Keaua amongst the flowing lava, heat, and ash. Kaiana pulls out his pistol, but before he can pull the trigger, a blast from the eruption blows them both backward, killing Keaua, but sparing Kaiana and prompting Kamehameha's army to cheer in victory. The episode ends on Oahu, in Kahikili's harem, where Lima delivers the news of Keaua's defeat at the hands of Kaiana. Kahikili tells Lima to return to Maui and to tell his army to prepare to tear through Hawaii Island to hunt down Kaiana, and the season comes to a close.
There we have it.
Yeah.
We both agree on an appropriate and fulfilling ending, but maybe mixed in with some questionable moments. What's not questionable is our topic today, an analysis of the battle scene. The entire season, and especially the last three or four episodes, have been preparing us for a showdown between Keaua and the Kaiana Kamehameha forces. Battle scenes are not typically my forte, my favorite thing to watch, just being honest. I'm more of a plot-driven type of person. It's the development of the storyline that usually intrigues me more. And I just kind of get through battle scenes if they're included in something that I'm watching or reading. But I have to admit that the battle scene in Chief of War, which was over half an hour in length, I believe. You probably have the exact time, right, Russell?
Yeah.
Was memorable, entertaining, dynamic, and it didn't feel redundant. Instead, it felt like every moment added something to the complexity of the story and allowed us to see different weapons and warrior techniques while bringing a brutal end to a number of our key adversaries. All of our leading actors were highlighted in powerful and important ways.
I thought it was a pretty unique battle for TV and film as well. It was a well-choreographed battle scene with plenty of cinematic moments and some tactics that I've never seen before in an on-screen battle. When Kaiana and Namake and Kamehameha enter the battle, they remove their mahi'ole and ahu'ula, and somebody actually takes it from them. Never seen that before. We get this great shot of the women advancing in formation while swinging the ma'a, the slings, above their head, We don't get a ton of scenes of women entering the fray on equal ground in other TV shows. Then there's this great sequence of Tony entering battle with a musket, and there's a wahine behind him, passing him a freshly loaded gun while taking the spent gun to reload. So many cool visuals. Mm. They did a great job of cutting between different subplots and characters, many of them expected, but what was unexpected was Heike squaring off against Opunui. What a contrast in characters and skill sets. And we see Opunui nearly overpower Heike, but with some help from Ka'ahumanu, justice gets served. And we see Heike's arc come to its logical conclusion. Plus, the battle was well lit, right? Mm-hmm. Remember all the complaints about Game of Thrones' epic final battle being too dark? Well, we actually got to see the majority of this battle. And even when we transitioned to night, the glow of the lava really kept us visually tuned in. So I thought it was really well done, really well choreographed.
Now, an underlying viewer question may be, is this battle depicted in Chief of War based on a real event? And my assumption is yes. It's based on a number of battles that occurred in Hawaii after the death of Kalaniopuu. And during this period of conflict between Kamehameha, Kiwalao, Kiowakuahuula, and let's add one more chief to the mix, Keawemauhili. If you remember from an earlier podcast, Russell and I shared our theory that the role of Kiowa, played by Russell's favorite, Cliff Curtis, yes, is actually a combination of two historical figures, Kiwalao and Keawakuahuula. I still believe this. The battle depicted in this episode also appears to be a blend, in this case, a mixture of events. One of the main battles that I'm guessing inspired Chief of War was the Battle of Moku'uhai, which took place on Hawaii Island around 1782. Many consider this to be the battle that put Kamehameha on the map. It was arguably his first major victory that ultimately paved the path for him to unify Hawaii Island and eventually the entire archipelago. In this battle, Kiwalao is killed, and it signifies a tremendous triumph for Kamehameha and his supporters. But Kiwalao wasn't killed by Kamehameha or by Kaiana. He was killed by none other than Ke'eaumoku.
Wow. Wow. Ke'eaumoku, who is played by Moses Goods in this series, but throughout the series, it's kind of sort of implied that Ke'eaumoku has some fighting skill. But it's only touched on once, right? When Kaiana attacks him in a council meeting after the massacre on the beach, and we see Ke'eaumoku smoothly position a dagger in Kaiana's chest to kind of stem that attack. Ke'eaumoku does get the spotlight briefly in the battle when he takes out an enemy combatant and he looks fierce and capable in those frames. But as for the historical Ke'eaumoku, I don't think I know that much about him or his nature as a chief or warrior.
Oh, he was incredible. And this history that we just talked about, this story of Ke'eaumoku killing Kiwalao, it's exceptional. Want to hear it?
Yes.
Good. At Moku'uhai, Ke'eaumoku had been struck and captured in the battlefield. He was badly injured. Kiwalao instructed his warriors to be careful with Ke'eaumoku because he desired his lei niho palaua named Nalukoki, and he didn't want spilled blood to spoil it. See, Russell, you're not the only one who wants a lei niho palaua. Kiwalao had every intention of killing Ke'eaumoku, and it looked like death was coming for the chief. But then another chief named Kamanawa saw Ke'eaumoku in this predicament and moved his forces in to intervene. Kiwalao ends up getting hit in the temple with a rock and falls to the ground, disoriented. Then Kiwalao's forces begin retreating and actually abandon their chief. Ke'eaumoku, meanwhile, sees Kiwalao lying on the ground, and he immediately begins feeling much better. He gets up, walks over to Kiwalao, and guts him on the spot, successfully killing him. Kiowa and his forces run into the sea to escape being slaughtered.
And I think we see some parallels with that historical account and the way that the battle played out on the screen. We get this climactic confrontation between Kiowa and Kaiana, similar to the confrontation between Ke'eaumoku and Kiwalao. But instead of Kaiana gutting Kiowa, Pele takes action, right? She takes Kiowa's life, sort of like a spiritual gutting. And we don't get to see what happens collectively to the enemy army after Opunui and Keaua both fall. And we don't get to see how bodies are treated culturally in the aftermath of war, which I think would have been kind of interesting to see.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I also want to come back to your points on Pele and the eruptions that are going on. So when it comes to the body, Kivalao's body, after he is killed, is offered as a sacrifice at Hikiauheo. And Moku'ohai, this battle we're talking about, actually takes place in Ke'e, close to Kealakekua Bay. So if you're looking at where things are located in respect to the island of Hawaii, Kamehameha ends up taking one of Kivalao's daughters with Kekuiapoiwa as his wife. And her name is Keopuolani. Maybe you've heard of her. She actually becomes Kamehameha's most sacred wife and eventually a very close confidant of Ka'ahumanu and an early convert and promoter of Christianity. Kamehameha also meets another spouse right around this time, and that is Ka'ahumanu.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so Ka'ahumanu actually takes, we'll say, custodianship over Kivalao's bones because she is related to him and she volunteers for this kuleana. So she cares for Kivalao before and after his bones are presented on the heiau. Kamehameha is said to be impressed with the young Ka'ahumanu, who, as we know, later becomes another of his wives. As I stated before, his most favorite, his number one, not first, but his number one wife.
So you're saying that historically, Ka'ahumanu wasn't even in Kamehameha's life at this point in Chief of War?
Yes. Well, at the Battle of Moku'ohai, she was not with Kamehameha. Was she with Kamehameha at other points in time? Yes. Okay. And is this series supposed to take place a little later? Yes. Yeah. But do I believe the influence for this battle comes from earlier? Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
Kind of confusing.
Little bit. Yeah. Yeah. But it is an interesting deviation for the series, especially since Ka'ahumanu had such a huge role in the battle, which I did not expect at all. We see her sniping with a musket throughout the fighting, including helping to take down Opunui during his face-off with Heke. But like you've been saying all along, right, they've really sped up her timeline in the series, inserting her into the story much earlier than she was in history.
Yeah, and I do believe Chief of War is supposed to be taking place in like the 1790s.
Yeah.
Yeah, so 1790s, they would have been together already. But again, the influence for these battles appears to be a little earlier on in time when you're looking at the timeline for Kivalao and Kiowa and the death of Kalaniʻōpuʻu. So yeah, things have been a little bit blended and meshed together. Okay. And one of the interesting things is Ka'ahumanu is shown in this episode as being a warrior. Ka'ahumanu was known for a number of things, but fighting wars physically was not one of them. However, I really don't mind this because I think maybe Jason and Pa'a wanted to give us a momentous battle scene inclusive of all of the show's main characters. In addition, women frequently went into battle and oftentimes fought side by side with their kane, with their lovers. So the idea of having lovers going into battle together is completely backed by our historical accounts.
So that scene where the wahine hands Tony a fresh musket, it's likely that she could be his lover as well.
Well, I mean, we moi aku moi mai, as they would say, right? So maybe yeah. It was.
Okay, well.
Maybe that's a side story there.
Yeah. We could do a little spinoff, yeah. Well, I think the idea of going to war together and being complementary to each other is an amazing part of who we are as a people. But we don't get to see Ka'iana and Kupuohi fight together. That would have been awesome to see. And now she's taking a spear to the gut and being tended to by Namake. Will we ever see Ka'iana and Kupuohi together again? I don't know that I want to watch a season 2 where they're not together.
Okay, so if we're going to look at history, and again, we don't know because Chief of War takes a lot of liberties with history. But historically, Ka'iana dies in Kupuohi's arms. And not here on Hawaii Island, but on Oahu. So
Okay. Let's
hope that they do pull some of this in and they don't kill off Kupuohi right now. And they let her live to fight another day.
Yes. Fingers crossed.
Yeah. And I think that would be really great to have Ka'iana die in her arms. Now, interestingly, I get the feeling like this battle in Chief of War is going to end the battles on Hawaii Island. What do you think?
Are we to assume that this victory means that Kamehameha is the chief over all the island now? I don't know. I mean, It seems like there's more battles to go.
I think there are more battles to go, but I feel like Chief of War is wrapping up the Hawaii Island battle. And they want to show Kamehameha as being this unifier of Hawaii. So now he can go on and start dealing with Kahekili and start making his mission to conquer the entire archipelago. That's my idea. And this makes sense for the storyline. But historically, after the Battle of Moku'uhai, it took Kamehameha nearly 10 years to successfully unify Hawaii Island. After Moku'uhai, Kivalao was no longer in the picture, but Kau and some of Puna went with Kiowa. Hilo and the other parts of Puna went with Keawe Mauhili. And Kona, Kohala, and portions of Hamakua, where you're from, were claimed by Kamehameha. So it was still a very divided and hostile environment. A number of battles between the various chiefs ensued over the years. Of the three, Keawe Mauhili is the first to perish in a battle between himself and Kiowa. Then, in 1790, in between battles, Kiowa's forces were traveling back to Kau when Kilauea erupted and ended up wiping out men, women, and children who were supporters of Kiowa. It's said that some of the victims' footprints can still be seen in the lava to this day. This event was taken as a sign that the fire goddess Pele supported Kamehameha over Kiowa. Kiowa's forces were severely weakened, and it wasn't long after this that Kamehameha was able to finally defeat him. I thought it was important to note because in numerous episodes and basically until the very end of the season finale, it was constantly made to seem like Pele was on Team Kiowa.
Right.
Historically, it looks like, if anything, she sided with Kamehameha. So that eruption at the end where she took out Kiowa's forces, like you mentioned, makes sense when we look at this 1790 eruption.
Real quick, just watching the series and watching the volcano erupt, I just immediately thought it was Mauna Loa. Do you think it's Mauna Loa or do you think it's Kilauea?
So, yeah, you know, I'm glad you brought this up because that was actually one of my questionable moments.
Yeah.
I don't know which volcano they were trying to make it, but he keeps saying Pele.
Yeah.
And so I was thinking Kilauea Halema'uma'u. The way the volcano shown in Chief of War is not how our volcano actually looks, right? It's not how she actually is. So it was a little bit different, a little bit confusing, but it made sense for the story.
Yeah, for the story it does. And as a Big Island guy, understanding geography and understanding a little bit of history, and you know, Mauna Loa doesn't get a lot of credit for helping to build the Big Island, right? Like Mauna Kea gets a lot of attention. It's the biggest mountain. But Mauna Loa, from what I've read, is responsible for a lot of the land in the southern part of the island, right? And so when I saw it in my head, I just automatically assumed it was Mauna Loa erupting. And so we don't know for sure, but
we gotta find out. We gotta ask someone.
We should.
Mehana, Team Kilauea. Russell, Team Mauna Loa.
All right, we'll have to see. We'll
try to call up Pa'a. Ask him.
I'll give him a call.
Now, soon after the volcanic eruption, Kamehameha builds a Lua Kiniheo, which is a sacrificial religious site of worship at Pu'ukohola. So some people might have know where Pu'ukohola is in Kauai Hai area, maybe visited it. It's a historic site today. So it's pretty well maintained. And there still are events and ceremonies that take place here. He invites Kiowa, possibly under false pretenses of peaceful discussions, to come and meet him. Kiowa arrives with two canoes, and when he steps off into the ocean to go ashore, an ihe soars through the air, pierces his body, and kills him. Who threw that ihe, Russell?
I don't know.
Not Kamehameha. Not Kaiana. You know who it is. It was Keeaumoku.
Yeah.
Man, Chief of War did him dirty by not letting him in on any of these major triumphs. Keeaumoku got things done historically. Everyone in Kiowa's canoe was killed, but the lives of those in the second canoe were spared because Kamehameha's own son, Kaoleoku, with his wahine, Kaneakapole, who also happened to be mother of Kiowa, was in that va'a. Kiowa's body and his men were offered at Pu'ukohola, and Kamehameha's rule of Hawaii Island was finally solidified at about 1791. Again, nearly 10 years after the Battle of Moku'uhai.
I don't think I've realized that it took that long for Kamehameha to consolidate power across the islands. It's such common knowledge that it was Kamehameha's big accomplishment. If you had asked me how long it took Kamehameha to unite the islands, I would not have guessed 10 years.
Well, that's only one island, remember? It took him 10 years to unify Hawaii Island.
Oh, just Hawaii Island?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So this is all Hawaii Island. He hasn't even gotten started.
Oh, that's crazy.
I mean, during this period of time, he was going and engaging in battles on other islands, and then he had to come back and deal with Kiowa and things like that. But really, this is what solidified his rule over Hawaii Island, and then he's able to fully turn his attention to things that are going on across Kapaya Aina.
Oh, I did not realize that.
Yeah, he doesn't unify all of Hawaii until about 1810.
Okay.
So this starts all the way back in, 1782.
Yeah.
And unification doesn't fully happen for Kapaiaina until around 1810.
So you're saying that it took almost 30 years to unite the islands? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, they wasn't jumping around as fast as they are in Chief of War. They actually had to walk and travel by canoe, and it took a lot of time and resources and sacrifice. Huge endeavor.
Wow.
All right. And two final points I'd like to make is, number one, again, we're dealing with Hawaii Island and this unification of Hawaii. I don't believe Western weapons were used at the Battle of Moku'uhai or in many of the battles that followed to secure Kamehameha's rule over Hawaii Island. Did Kamehameha eventually utilize the red-mouthed gun? Yes. So Chief of War, again, brought this in a little earlier, and we can understand why. Second, and this is a big one, plot twist, Kaiana wasn't even at the Battle of Moku'uhai. He joined up with Kamehameha, I believe, around 1789, after returning from 3 years abroad and having learned more about the outside world, learned English, learned about weapons. So does he bring all of this knowledge back to Hawaii, as the episode shows? Yes, but maybe at a slightly different time, in a slightly different situation. Who was with Kamehameha throughout the entire time of unifying Hawaii Island? Keomoku was. His role was huge, as we saw. And someone not mentioned by Chief of War or in our discussions, Ekalamai, but Keku Haupio, a renowned expert in war and a man who trained Kamehameha and many of his forces in the art of lua or Hawaiian martial arts, was also an instrumental part of this period of time of unifying the Big Island, Hawaii Island.
It's a good thing we get to chat with Moses Goods, who played Keomoku in the series. Maybe he'll have some insight into why he doesn't get as much prominence in the series as he does in actual history. But it's good to have that context and history, but also good that Pa'a really simplified the storyline, right? And the amount of characters in the series. If there's one thing we know for sure, our history is complicated and complex and should be studied separately from Chief of War, because Chief of War is really just entertainment. Plus, how many more characters with names starting with K can we stuff into this series, right? Kivala'o, Keku Haupio, Keopuolani. At some point, it's going to drive viewers crazy.
Too bad. We liked our K names.
That's true. I mean, almost all of my kids have them. So, all right. We'll be right back after a short break.
Let's face it. Life gets busy, but you don't want to miss out. HPR makes it easy to stay connected. Introducing the Akamai Recap. It's a quick roundup of local news stories sent to your inbox every weekday afternoon. It's free, and it takes just 10 seconds to sign up. Visit hawaiipublicradio.org/akamai.
All right, let's get into the categories. Most impactful or chicken skin moment. For me, without question, it was that zoom-out shot of the mana wahine in V formation, swinging their ma'a or slings above their heads, led by Kupu'ohi into battle, right? Her shout of imua, and then the camera pulls back, and these women fan out, and it was just shot so cinematically. It reminded me of how our wahine stood strong together on Mauna Kea in 2019, and it made me really proud of our people and our culture, and really, I mean, literally gave me chicken skin.
Incredible scene, Russell. And I love that you made reference to the Mauna Kea movement and our mana wahine. I actually really liked the entire episode. There's so much to choose from, but it probably was the scene where Kaiana's ohana was preparing for battle. And there's so much anticipation for what's about to happen. The characters are all intently focused. And then you have the moment between Kaiana, Kupuohi, and Namake. It's mature. It's culturally appropriate. And I don't know about you, but it made me feel watching everyone go into battle together so much better.
Yeah. Yeah, it did. I love these prepping to go to war montages that are in movies. And this was a really nice one, especially because they were family. All right. The character that brought the most heat or the performance that we really like. I just want to shout out all the background actors in the battle. I've done background on many projects and they are important, right, to the tone and realism of the scene. You don't get that epic feel of this battle without them. Mm-hmm. And I did kind of scrub through the battle frame by frame to see who I could see. And I want to shout out Fideye Richmond, Terani Richmond, Maro'uo Richmond, Wes Laclay, and Stephen Pokipala. I see you guys. You guys were out there. You guys did awesome.
Yes, I also want to shout out. I saw my former Kumu, Kumu for Life, Kumu Kalehua Kaeo. I saw educator, musician, tattoo artist, Kalehua Krug.
Yeah.
And they were doing chanting, which I loved, right? In the beginning of the battle scene, showing that spiritual battle that's going on. Kaho'okahi Kanuha we saw in that scene. So awesome work by everybody who was involved. Good choice.
Yeah.
I believe all of the actors brought their A game to the season finale, and the storyline allowed our main characters to each hold the spotlight at multiple times throughout the episode. So what more can you ask of a season finale as an actor, right? Being able to be highlighted that one final time. Very well done. However, I do have a favorite, and my pick is Maori actor Te Kohi Tuhaka, who plays Namake. His need to reestablish Pono within the family unit, his fierce battle scenes, his touching of the earth and insightfully looking to the volcano prior to going into war, his final scene holding the wounded Kupuohi. He's been steadfast throughout this entire season, and I thought he was phenomenal in the last episode.
Next category, most questionable moment, or the moment that raised questions, or the moment that needs more explanation. For me, it was, why did we get such an anticlimactic ending when it comes to the face-off with Kaiana and Keo'ua for all of the depraved things that Keo'ua did, especially killing our Nahi? There should have been more justice. Keo'ua should have suffered more. I can see how maybe the writers are trying to avoid cliche, or maybe Keo'ua wouldn't have been able to compete physically with Kaiana, or maybe they just ran out of time. I just wondered why there wasn't just this big battle and, you know, and Keo'ua suffers for killing Nahi.
Interesting, because I actually really thought that was a great ending.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So to me, what it showed is Kaiana fully intends to kill Keo'ua, and he's standing there and he pulls out the gun, right?
Yeah.
This Western weapon. And that's how he's going to kill Keo'ua. He's not going to kill him by ihe or with a lei nihomano. He's going to kill him with this Western gun. And before that can happen, the volcano erupts, the earth moves, and these men are pushed backwards, and Keo'ua ends up dying in this. And for me, it signified that these men still do not have the final say. It's the gods, it's the Akua that have the final say over who's going to be victorious and who isn't. And so that resonated with me. I liked that incorporation. But I can understand you wanted more of a fight.
Yeah, I did.
Pele always wins. There you go. My questionable moment is a theme, a reoccurrence tied to at least the last three episodes, and that is Kiowa's connection to and utilization of the volcano, which we've talked about a few times in today's podcast. He uses the volcano as a heyo, and specifically a type of luakini, or sacrificial temple of worship. His story is set in the lands of Kau, so a tie to the volcano makes sense, but in my opinion, not in the way the storyline unfolded. For example, in episode 8, he pushed Kamehameha's kahuna into the volcano as an offering, and then in this episode, he threw the Oahu chief's teeth into the pit. While human sacrifices were used for specific rituals involving going to war, which was about to happen in this episode, these rituals took place at the Luakini, also known as the sacrificial heiau, dedicated to Ku. as far as I know, we didn't throw people into the volcano. That's definitely a Western myth and has no concrete evidence of ever having happened in Hawaiian society. So it made me laugh. I thought it was kind of humorous. And to add to that, Pele, who resides in Halemaumau at Kilauea on Hawaii Island, wouldn't have been interested in this type of offering. Not her MO.
The Kainamakua Memorial best line from the episode. In the beginning, Kaiana has this great scene with Tony where he shows a side of Hawaiian culture that I think is incredibly powerful. Kaiana says to Tony, "This is your home. Here is your family. No more running."
"I want you to know that no matter what happens to me, this is your home. Here is your family. No more running."
There's plenty of talk today about keeping Hawaiian lands in Hawaiian hands and how we would love for Kanaka and the diaspora to come home, and just a real focus on being Hawaiian in Hawaii. And I agree with all of that. But there are those who come here and not only learn about our culture, but let it live in them and really make a connection to the Aina and Ohana and are brought deeper into the Hawaiian community. I think of people like Puakea Nogelmeyer, Kamaka Kehau Fernandez. When I was living in Colorado, I met a dude. I introduced him to Hawaiian culture, and he took to it like breathing air. And one of my favorite pictures of all time is me and him in Colorado about to kalua our first pig together. So shout out to Lanakila Run, a brother to me to this day. I just really love that there's room for that. There's room for people outside of our bloodlines or our culture to be brought into our culture and made one of us.
Yes, and with the proper intentions and respect, yeah, it absolutely can work. And yeah, I think we learned from that historically, because if you look after when we go into our constitutional kingdom years in Hawaii, right around the mid-1840s, what you see is that we had a multi-ethnic national body. So Hawaiians were the vast majority at, I believe, about 85%, people who were ethnically Hawaiian. But citizens of Hawaii, Hawaiian citizens, were Japanese and Chinese and Filipino and Caucasian. And so we had a multi-ethnic body, and we were a very, in many respects, cohesive group that worked together and loved one another and supported the queen. And so important to note, and we still have a lot of those long-term families that are still a part of our communities to this day.
Yeah, love it.
I cannot go into battle with something unspoken in between us. Namake tu Kaiana.
I have always fought by your side. Yet I cannot go into battle with something unspoken between us.
Wonderfully written. Magnificently played out. Such a pertinent line to open the dialogue regarding the love affair that happened between Namake and Kupuohi, which was something highly anticipated since Kaiana's return home for viewers. This line to me is incredibly to the point and yet very sincere. He's being brutally honest, but still showing so much affection and a need to have pono, balance, yeah, within the family unit before they all go off into battle together. This line set up the resolution within the ohana to address the occurrence and then move forward. I'm so happy the comfort that Kupuohi and Namake found with one another was graciously understood by Kaiana. It was so not Hollywood, and in all of the best ways.
Yeah, agree.
Yeah, with Hollywood, you're expecting a blowout between the family, and instead, they showed their strength and ultimately the importance of their bonds and values. Beautiful. And Kaiana's eloquent response, "You did no wrong to a dead brother. I'm here now. I cannot face Kiowa without my family."
"You did no wrong to a dead brother. But I'm here now. I cannot face Kiowa without my family."
Perfection. There you have it, Russell. Nothing to forgive.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Good on you, Namake. And good on you, Kaiana. The Meredith Artley Most Momoa moment. Mihana, don't you think the entire battle was just one long Momoa moment?
100%. And all of the main characters and all of the supporting characters were also having their own Momoa, yeah, moments.
Yeah.
But I'll pinpoint a scene. And this was when Kaiana killed Kiowa's chanter, ripped out his tongue, and then ate it.
Oh.
And then he yells at Kiowa. It was beyond wild. I absolutely loved it. I also could imagine something like that happening in a really intense battle. And the significance of killing the chanter and removing his tongue, like your story, your genealogy, Kiowa, will never be known from this point forward. So Momoa.
For me, it was right before the battle when Kaiana was spouting off and belittling the Maui army and Kiowa's army. And then he addresses Kiowa directly and pulls out the ultra dramatic language. He's spitting everywhere as he's shouting, and he gets super emotional about Nahi's death.
I did not come here for battle. I came here to rid your kingdom of your bloodline and erase the shame of your birth. Bring me your men and your gods, and I will feed them fire and black smoke for what you have done to me.
That was for sure a Momoa moment. And shout out to Jason. He directed the finale, right? And I believe that's his directorial debut. And so it's impossible to watch it without seeing his fingerprints over everything. So really the whole episode really is a Momoa moment. What prop or artifact would you want from this episode? I've resisted wanting a Mahi'ole and an Ahu'ula because I know it comes with a lot of protocol and kuleana, but damn if those Hawaii Island colors look great on Kaiana. As someone from Hawaii Island, I'd love to have something so representative of my home island.
I will go with, this is a battle scene, so I'm going to go with the large Lei Niho Mano. So that's one of the weapons that quite a few warriors have. Kaiana uses it a couple times, but it's really exaggeratedly big, and it's got this lei, this circle of shark teeth that go around it, and they use it for slicing people and gutting people and just all kinds of mayhem. And I'm like, okay, if I have to go into battle and I need a weapon, I think that's one of the ones I'd like by my side.
Yeah. It's so funny to watch you get so excited about certain parts of the battle when you yourself said that you're not really into the bloody guts.
Hey, that means they did a good job, yeah. Right? If someone who that's not really their thing is like, yeah, let's go. Yeah, they did a good job.
Who won the episode? I think it's pretty clear that it was Kaiana since he led the army to victory. And also ended up with Kaahumanu, kind of low-key crush that she thinks he's dead.
He was magnificent in battle, and I'm still hung up on my Momoa moment. It kind of reeked of a Khal Drogo,
yeah.
And I mean that in all of the best possible ways.
Last category, our hot take or prediction for the next season, I guess, since we're at the finale. I predict the season 2. On my wish list of Hawaiians, I hope make an appearance in season 2, Jason Scott Lee, Kelly Hu, Lindsay Watson, and maybe like a cameo from Keanu Reeves, brother is Hawaiian. And I know there's a cohort of Hawaiian actors out there that are honing their craft and staying ready so we can represent when the time comes to tell the next chapter of this story.
Good list of actors, but I'm going to go on the other end and say, let's get some unknowns there.
Yeah.
You know, people, like you said, who have been practicing and developing and wanting these opportunities. And if Chief of War is about creating more platforms and more opportunities for our local talent, season 2 is the time to let that shine.
Yeah.
We also got to have a second season, right? I'm glad that one storyline was wrapped up. I believe this battle was used to showcase the securing of Hawaii Island by Kamehameha, as I explained to you in our discussion. So my prediction is season 2 will be focused on, after Kupuohi makes a full recovery, of course, the taking on of Kahekili. Season 3 will be the unifying of the Hawaiian Islands with an emphasis on Kauai. And season 4 will be more focused on Europeans and dramatic transformations. I'm lining it all up already, okay?
Oh, all right.
I'm also wondering if diseases will be showcased at all.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Sickness, for the most part, was left out of this season, with the exception of Kalaniopuu, who was ill when we see him earlier in this season. But we do know that they were rampant during this period of time. I'm also wondering how far our lead character, Kaiana, will go in the series. Because historically, he doesn't make it beyond the Battle of Nu'uanu on the island of Oahu after he parts ways with Kamehameha and joins forces with the Oahu chiefs. Did I spoil anything? Again, they might change this. Truthfully, I, like many viewers, really hope that the series returns telling great stories and providing us with awesome entertainment sprinkled with some cool opportunities to dive deeper and learn more.
Yes, heck yeah. All right. This is the point in the episode where we were going to include our interview with the excellent Hawaii actor Moses Goods, who plays Chief Ke'eaumoku. He shares his thoughts on the impact of the series and who he had just a little bit too much fun with on set. It was a great interview, so great that I didn't want to cut anything out, so we decided to make it part two of this episode, and you can download it today. So that's it for part one of this episode of Feathers and Fire. I'm Russell Subiono.
I'm Mehana Makainai. Thanks so much for listening, and mahalo nui again to our guest, Moses Goods.
This episode was written by myself and Mehana and produced by me and Savannah Harriman-Pote.
Mahalo to our supporting team of Liberty Peralta, Sylvia Flores, and Sophia McCullough.
Big mahalo to HPR's president and CEO, Meredith Artley, who's probably still sitting behind the front desk just waiting for Jason Momoa to come by for an interview.
Don't forget to call us when that happens.
Okay.
Our theme song is Clarity by Kenny Endo from the album Eternal Energy. Learn more about Kenny and his music, as well as his traditional and contemporary Japanese drumming school, Taiko Center of the Pacific, at kennyendo.com.
Chief of War Season 1 may have come to a close, but we have one more podcast episode left. It's our post-series wrap-up, and you can download it next week, Saturday, September 27th, from Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or the HPR website, HawaiiPublicRadio.org, or listen to us on the HPR mobile app. I'm Russell Subiono. Aloha and mahalo for listening.
I'm Mehana Makainai. Until next time, pipi holo ka'au.